ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode explores, expands, and evolves the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity, joy, and exponential growth. And now, here is your host, Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Adventures in Truth livecast. My name is Jim Case. I am the host, and I'm excited that you're here, and I thank you for being here. I appreciate you joining us on this Friday afternoon. If you are watching us on YouTube, please make sure you hit that like and subscribe button, and please feel free to comment. Let us know that you're here. If you're on Facebook, you can head over to the Adventures in Truth Facebook page. There you can hook up with the live. And if you have any questions for us during the show, or if you'd like to interact with us, you can do that there. And we are also on E360 TV, which is the source of our live stream. E360 TV, either .com or the app. A great TV station, has all kinds of independent content that I think you'll love. Check it out. So thank you for being a part of the show today. I'm excited. I've got a great guest for you today, a great guest co-host. Dr. Greg Hammer is here. He is a lot of things, which we're going to go over here in just a moment. But we're going to have a great conversation about how intentional living changes our relationship with duality. And interestingly enough, intentional living and duality, there's lots of concepts in here that we're going to flesh out as a part of this conversation, to really help people understand the importance of how we focus our energy and how we use our energy in the present moment of every moment of our lives throughout the course of our day. And that we have the ability at any moment to shift course through that intentionality, and also helping us to get simplified, because as we're not dealing in the duality in the same fashion, we can focus ourselves more intently. And we will get into that more on the other side of the break. But before we begin, we'll be right back right after this. Hey, everybody, www.fearisachoicebook.com. Check it out, website for the book. There you can find the order links through Amazon and Barnes & Noble and IndieBound. But even more excitingly, as I'm celebrating the anniversary of my book's publication. And I want to say thank you to all of you out there who've ordered the book, who've reviewed the book. I'm excited because it continues to grow and continues to gain traction. This is a powerful, powerful book. If you've not been introduced to it, I encourage you to check it out. This book will change your relationship with fear. And why I say that and how I know that is because when you change your relationship with fear, it changes everything in your life. It creates a change in your perspective. When you live in a fear-based experience, you are kind of dumbing down all of who you are. And from my viewpoint, it's sort of narrowing the focus of what you can see in the world so that you end up limiting what you allow into your space, because fear dumbs down our experience. When you change that relationship with fear, what happens is that you begin to open things in a brand new way. And so that opening creates a whole floodgate of opportunity and potential that was not accessible by you because you were living in a limited perspective. So what this book does is it helps to carry you through understanding the evolution of fear, understanding that it is not something we are born with in the sense that we don't come in afraid. We come in and we learn fear. And because we learn it, we have the ability to change it. We have the ability to live a different form of life in that regard. So www.fearisachoicebook.com. Check it out. I appreciate all of you out there. Looking forward to hearing more from you, more reviews from you guys as well. I appreciate it. And we'll be back right after this. All right, guys, the year of conscious creation. My world is good. This is a simple, very simple, and very intentional, actually. It's kind of apropos to our conversation today. It's a neutral, positive statement. My world is good. That allows us as individuals, let me take a step back first. I see us as 7.5 to 8 billion unique worlds inhabiting one planet. And I say that very specifically because no one can live your life for you. No one can choose your life for you. No one can feel your life for you. No one can experience your life for you but you. So in that context, the idea of building this kind of neutral positive statement, I had been observing for a while. I started this back in January, and I had been observing for quite a while that there seemed to be a huge influx of negative energy, negative focus that was sort of driving the ship. And I thought to myself, how can I help shift this? How can I, Jim, this guy sitting in Colorado, offer something that could have a benefit? And that's where this evolved to, because since this is all about energy, and that's what this platform is all about, is about energy. Creating this neutral positive statement allows us all within the context of our worlds to generate a connection to goodness. Because remember, perception is nothing more than a feedback loop. It is what you put out into the world in the way of thoughts and feelings and beliefs that is reflected back to you once it pings the environment and comes back and gives you feedback about how you feel about those things or where you are in relation to those things. So you have this going on where your perception, all driven by your own emotions and beliefs and guidelines, are informing you all the time. So my world is good is a way of creating this neutral positive statement that you launch out into your space and you continue to launch into your space and you build this energy of my world is good. And as you do, you begin to see more goodness because, again, you are creating that perception. And as you create more goodness, the more of us that are doing this, the more we create a tipping point. We create a momentum change away from the intensely negative experience into a more positive experience, into bringing more goodness into the conscious awareness of our world. And we start that individually and we grow it as we continue to do that. So my world is good. 10 times when you wake in the morning, 10 times before you go to bed. And then you can use it throughout the day to set the intention of your day. You can use it throughout the day to help you realign if you're feeling a little wonky in your alignment or you're feeling a little off. You can use the statement to get you centered and grounded because as you practice it more and more, it becomes an instantaneous shift. So my world is good. Check it out. I appreciate all of you that are a part of this. I ask you to continue to share your stories and share your thoughts and ideas about it. Wherever you see this all over social media, make sure you click it, share it, let everybody know about it as well. That's the only requirement of the movement. I don't need your emails. I don't need you to do anything other than to show up. Your energy, your focus, and intention. So my world is good. Join us, check it out. We'll be back right on the other side of the break, and Dr. Hammer will be joining us. We'll be right back. All right, in this powerful topic that we have today, I want to introduce you to Dr. Greg Hammer, MD. Greg Hammer, MD, is a professor at Stanford University School of Medicine, pediatric intensive care physician, pediatric anesthesiologist, mindfulness expert, and author of Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals, published in 2010. A member of the Stanford Well MD Initiative, Dr. Hammer is currently the chair of the Physician Wellness Task Force for the California Society of Anesthesiologists. He has been a visiting professor and lecturer on wellness at institutions worldwide and teaches Gain to medical students, residents, and fellows at Stanford. So I'm going to bring Dr. Greg in. Good afternoon to you, sir. Welcome to the show. Super glad that you're here. How are you?
Hey, Jim. I'm very happy to be with you again. I just have one minor correction. The book, Gain Without Pain, was published in 2020.
What did I say?
I think you said 2010.
But, I did, and it it says 2020 clear as it could be on the page there.
It's not a problem.
But anyway, it's good. I've been reading it. I appreciate you sharing it with me. I've gotten, I think, about a third of the way through, and I was loving it from many different perspectives. But largely, I think, as I mentioned just briefly, is because there were so many things where I felt like, even though we are coming from some vastly different places, that we see things in a very clear, in a very similar perspective. And that's really why I'm excited that you're here, because that perspective, I think, will be of benefit to many people. So thank you.
I think the truth is very simple, Jim. And when you describe the truth, no matter what your perspective is, what your angle is, you and the others who are speaking about the truth are always talking about the same thing.
Yes.
So that's, I think, the good news is that truth is very simple, mm-hmm. and it's part of our nature, and our true nature is happiness.
Yes,
and
I agree.
So I love your work. Thank
you.
You know, one thing I hope we can talk about today is fear, because as you were describing your book, which I haven't had the opportunity to read yet, I would be very interested in your perspective on fear, learning a little bit more about it. And to me, I would say that when we are in the present moment, we are happy. If we think of our happiest times, they're always when we are present and when we are not thinking about what happened yesterday or what might befall us tomorrow.
Yes.
On the other hand, we tend to be fixated on the past and the future in ways that are maladaptive. So I think it's adaptive to think about the past to the extent that we identify mistakes we've made so we don't mm-hmm. keep making them. It's adaptive to savor our wonderful memories. Beyond that, when we get stuck in the past, we're overthinking it. And mm-hmm. inevitably, this leads to judgment, self-judgment, regret, embarrassment, shame. And likewise with the future, yes. It's adaptive to plan for the future to the extent that we put food on the table, and mm-hmm. certainly adaptive to plan for good times ahead. But when we overthink the future, we generate anxiety and fear.
Yeah.
And so to me, fear is related to our obsession with the future. And when we recognize that we're overthinking the future and catastrophizing and becoming fearful, a little light bulb can go off. Mm-hmm. If we practice this recognition, if we recognize first that we have this obsession with the past and future, and the other way our mind works, it tends to apparently veil our true nature, is that we have a negativity bias. So you put our negativity bias together with our obsession with the past and the future, and you get shame and regret and fear and anxiety.
I love the way you describe it, because you're getting into the minutia of what happens in what I call, there may be different definitions of duality, and you'll come to learn as we talk and work together. I don't come from a traditionally schooled background. My stuff is all through the experience of my life and the experience of the experiences of my life. And I've had education and those kinds of things, but the essence of what you're talking about is the thing that I call duality. And we're going to get into that in some depth here after we do the meditation. But I see the duality existing in what I call the ego and what I call the soul, meaning that is the dualistic experience of being human on this planet, being a source, a spark of the divine, as it were, as I would prefer to see it, in one element of all of who we are. But when we focus into that ego aspect of us, that's where the fear comes in. And that's where the fear is bred via the society at large, not necessarily all intentionally, meaning bad intentioned, but there's a lot of bad intention as well. but the fear element is all about getting stuck either in the past or in the future, because if you're not in now, you have nothing to assess. You have nothing to ground yourself. You have nothing to stand in your truth because you have nothing grounded here. So it's, you know, I think it's that powerful, and I'm glad we're doing this. And having the idea of intentional living layered into this process makes it so important, because the relationship, that dualistic relationship, the more intentional we are, the more we lean toward that larger part of ourselves, that aspect of divinity that is within us. And then the ego then can perform its role, which is as a support of that, meaning the ego being the consciousness that runs this physical vessel, the consciousness that is here to keep the body on the planet. That's its only job. But because we've given it so much responsibility, I liken this, I use this analogy a lot, but I liken the ego to an 8-year-old who, and my life and my energy, all of who I am, is this multi-billion dollar corporation. And I'm giving the keys to that corporation to an 8-year-old and saying, hey, go have a good time. Let's see how this works out for you. I'm going to take a quick break here, because I like to start every show with a little bit of meditation to kind of pull all the energy together about this topic, so that we can really focus. And those people who are listening and watching around us, their energy gets to be a part of this conversation as well, even if they don't have a chance to say anything. But we're going to be right back with that. So bear with me, Greg. We'll be back right on the other side of that. All right, guys, here we go. Taking that moment of, oops, where did I lose it? It's a problem when you don't put your glasses on for these things. All right, so we are going to dive into taking a moment of focus. This is, as I was saying, a very important part of the show for me, because it likes to harness the energy. I really believe in the idea of where two or more are gathered. The idea that as we harness our energies, as I talked about in My World is Good, we come together in a powerful way. So let's start that by breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. I want you to focus with me, breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. And as you do, just let your awareness settle into the center of your chest. If you want, you could take your middle fingers and just gently feel onto the middle of the breastbone. You'll feel there's a little bit of a divot to one side or the other. Mine's there a little bit on the right side. It's just a soft spot. Just notice that spot, but bring your awareness to it, so that as you're breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, you're in the center of your chest, you're in your heart, and you're in the center of breath. And I want you to consciously be aware of that space, because we're going to do a few things from here as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. And as you continue to breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, I want you to become aware of your field. Your field is the energy of you, the expansion of you that extends beyond this physical body. And as you sit here and as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, just feel your way into that experience. Let yourself be informed however you inform yourself in these matters. Sometimes you see them. Sometimes some people feel them. Some people have an experience. Some people have a smell or a visual that associates with them. It's okay however it shows up for you. Just continue to breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. Let yourself be informed of this amazing field that surrounds you, and look and observe at how large and how big this field is, that you can observe it, and it moves way beyond even probably your vision. This is all of who you are. This is the magnificence of all that you are, that's not just a physical body on the planet. And as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, I want you to take that energy. I want you to call your energy, call it into you. Feel yourself as you sit in this space, breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. Feel the power of that energy as you bring it into your heart. Call that energy into your heart space. Let it, feel it, be with it as it's coming in. And notice the changes that you feel as you call forth this incredible essence of all that you are. For me, I feel that warmth. I feel the tingling. I feel the experience of this coalescing of energy in my heart space, breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. And I want you to allow that energy to settle calmly into you, because I want you to experience the inside of you right now as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. Let that consciousness roam around inside your body. Begin to build a relationship with the inside of you, It's all part of you. And here you are using your energy as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth to feel and experience what it is inside your own head. Explore your brain. Have you ever explored your own brain as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth? Just feel through it. Feel in it. Let yourself wander around in there, the fluid that's surrounding it, in this beautiful skull that's just sitting here. And as you trace around to the back of the brain, into the brainstem, coming to see the spine, this amazing spinal cord that runs from the top to the bottom, this conductor of energy that's constantly moving energy through the body. It's encased in bone in this magical liquid that just holds it in place. And the nerves that come from it, breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, feeling this amazing complex of incredible biology going on as you trace those nerves, and then you're in the cavity of your body, exploring your own organs, exploring everything that's in here, just seeing it for the first time or experiencing it maybe for the first time. Feel into that. Let that feeling go deeper. Let that feeling go even deeper as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. And just be aware of all of the systems that are operating completely without your control. All of the things that are happening that keep this body on the planet for you, day in and day out, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. Be aware of the harmony that it continues to create. Even if you are in resistance and pulling against that harmony, the body finds ways to come into balance. Even if it's an inordinate, weird balance, it will find a way to find balance until it can no longer do that. But notice how that all works inside of you as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. And settle into that experience as we focus consciously into the breath. I believe that breath is the cornerstone of life. It is prana, it is chi, it is life force. And that every moment you breathe is a moment of creation. Every moment that you consciously breathe allows you to become more aware of your energy and allows you to become a better custodian of your energy. Because as you understand breath, you understand energy and your energy. So we're going to breathe into a count of four. We're going to hold that breath. We're going to relish that fullness. And then we're going to consciously surrender it in exhale to a count of six. And we use the six count to purge the deepest parts of the energy and breath from the lungs, so that as you reach the bottom, as you reach the empty space and the void, that you also rest in that in anticipation as you prepare for the next moment of creation with that new breath, and you engage the lungs and continue the process. So here we go. As you're focused deeply into the body, I want you to breathe in through the nose to a count of four, inhaling, two, three, four. Good. Feel that. Relax the shoulders and the neck. Feel the body relax in that full, amazing space. And now consciously choose to surrender it as you exhale, two, three, four, five, six. And now rest, relax the body in the void, in that not know space, feeling the emptiness and relishing it, being a part of that empty space as you engage the lungs and inhale, two, three, four. That fullness is amazing and rich and wonderful as you relax into it and you feel it and you indulge it and then you surrender it, two, three, four, five, six. And now we rest in anticipation, in not know, preparing, being ready as we engage the lungs again, inhaling, two, three, four. Feel the fullness, feel that amazing feeling of richness as you feel full, and then surrender it as you let go and exhale, two, three, four, five, six. Beautiful. Stay in that void space for just a moment. In that space of allowing, it's all there. And let yourself continue this breathing process on your own for a moment. Continue as you inhale to a count of four, feeling all of that amazing breath as you're focused into the body and being aware of the extraordinary things that are happening as you call forth this breath. And as you rest in the breath, and as you surrender the breath, you in every moment creating this powerful wave of creation, this powerful wave, taking in life force, ingesting it, integrating it, letting it be, and then surrendering it and letting it go, and then being prepared for the new moment. We do this continually. Let's be conscious of it. And as you are now, just take this in, let it wash over you, let it be in the space with you, take it if it works for you. I surrender to my love. I surrender to my potential. I surrender to my abundance. I surrender to my love. Breathing that in, feeling it deeply. And as you do, continuing to breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, it's time to relax the energy. And I want you now to observe your field as it begins to move back out into the universe at large, out into the world. Just notice the magnificence of it, the glow of it, the power of it, the expansiveness of it. I just want you to taste it right now. I want you to experience that little bit. Maybe you can go even further. And as you let that energy go, bring your awareness back to this space, into this room, as we go back into the conversation with Dr. Hammer and talking more about this powerful topic. And my glasses. All right. So where are we? Defining the duality. We're going to bring Dr. Hello again. Welcome back. All right. So let's get into talking a little bit about duality. As I was saying before the break, I kind of see duality as this, the split between the ego and the soul. Do you have a different perspective of that from your background? Do you have a different idea of that?
I can tell you what I think of when I think of duality, and a student of Advaita or non-duality. I love the word non-duality because it means one, mm-hmm. but it's more elegant than saying one. Saying not to. So to me, we really have non-duality ultimately. And that is that, you know, there are two ways of looking at the world, if you will. One is the materialist model in mm-hmm. which consciousness arises from the mind. So the mind is primary in this model and we think up consciousness. The other model is the consciousness only model. And that is that everything is consciousness. That's all there is. And we, in fact, are modulations of consciousness. Everything we see and feel are modulations of consciousness. And so there is no separate self or ego, but this is rather an apparent sensation or vision that is the ego. So yes, the ego represents a separate self only in the sense of it being apparent. It's mm-hmm. it's a veil over our true nature, which is pure consciousness. Not even pure consciousness. There is only consciousness. So
right.
there's no impure consciousness. So that's my feeling, Jim, is that there is an apparent duality, but we can still know the truth, which is non-duality, which is that yes. everything is a modulation of consciousness. And when we are fixated on the past and the future and not in the present, we can imagine that we are seeing ourselves as a separate self. And that generates fear and anxiety. So we go back to fear, self-judgment, mm-hmm. threat in the past, fear and anxiety in the future. And when we recognize that our thoughts are being dominated by these sensations, we can have a laugh to ourselves and bring it back to the true reality, which is that there is only this present moment. It's the only moment we ever experience.
Yeah.
And there is only consciousness. So let's, while we're having this experience of being apparently a separate self, let's enjoy it. I liken it to playing in the sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
So let's have a good time with this body and in this apparent awareness.
Yes.
But let's ultimately understand that there is, in fact, non-duality.
I love that. You know, the only thing I'll say to, because I don't find any flaw in what you're saying, and I kind of find myself sort of betwixt and between, because I agree that the ego sort of is this overlay. But I think what's happened in, at least over the course of my lifetime, and I don't know if this has been true in the human experience all along, but in the course of my lifetime, I have observed people becoming aware of this veil or this duality, and then focusing in on how to stimulate it, how to stimulate it more, how to create even more separation so that people trying to live their lives are continually confronted with unworthiness, not enoughness, not smart enoughness, not good enoughness, not good looking enoughness, not a good body, whatever it is. You know, you're not eating the right food. You don't raise your kids the right way. You don't send them to the right schools, you know? And so that message continually gets to be hammered. And I think that for me, in my experience, it creates more of the duality, even though we know that it's a non-dualistic experience. It's hard to confront because you're like, over here, you're in reaction mode. And over here, you're going, what the heck? Why am I in reaction mode? So getting to the place in our experience, and that's what this is all about in evolution, is getting every individual coming to the point of that recognition, I think, that you were talking about, is that there is no, you want to play in the playground. You want to enjoy all of it. The best way to do that is to play in now. The best way to do that is to be in the spontaneity of now, in the imagination of now, so that you can fully embrace all of that. You can fully embrace all of who you are. But if you're in comparison, if you're, you know, and that's the challenge, is we've all had a particular way we were brought up through whether it was through religion or through not religion or through spirituality or through whatever it was. Typically religion, because religion tends to be fear-based in its structure. So we start from behind the eight ball in apparency from behind the eight ball, but I think it's all kind of beautifully set up to help us be rock stars. We just got to look in the right direction. And I think to your point with your book and what your focus is in intentionality, I think that's a profound and ultimately powerful way to migrate yourself to that focus of non-dualistic.
Well, I agree. I think we do acquire certain ways of thinking, partly through religious training and partly through our experience. It's really a developmental process that we have to identify ourselves as a separate self, as an ego, because we have to learn. And as you said, we're born unafraid, we're born pure, we're born without a sense of time, without a future and a past. We're just right. Present, we're pure presence. But we have to be weaned from our mother's breast. We have to begin to understand that this is me and that is not me. This is mine, that is not mine. I mean, that's what we're taught, right? These are your toys, those are their toys. So you can share, but don't try to take their toys and call them your own. So we acquire these ways of thinking. And I think the way we think is a combination of our training, if you will, the ideas that are sort of drilled into us. And also, I think partly from the history of man. So I think, for example, 50,000 years ago, it may have been adaptive for early Homo sapiens to be tucked away in their cave and to be imagining that there might be a saber-toothed tiger lurking outside the mouth of their cave. And right. So there was this sort of fear and anxiety that may have been adaptive. It may have helped that individual survive, procreate, have more children, spread that gene associated with fear and anxiety so that it would keep that individual and his offspring alive. So that may have been adaptive a long time ago, but fast forward to now, we don't live in a cave with the possibility of a saber-toothed tiger lurking outside the mouth of our cave. But that fear, that sort of obsession with the future, is part of our DNA. The good news is that our brains are malleable. We have this great quality called neuroplasticity. So through intention, we can actually rewire our brains. And there's some very elegant examples of that, but essentially that's the role of intention. It's to decide that we don't need to be so negative about things. We don't need this negativity bias. And we don't need this obsession with the past and the future, other than to the limited extent that those are adaptive. So through our intention, we can determine what's adaptive for us and what's maladaptive. Mm-hmm. And we can begin to see the world as it truly is, which is not negative. There's nothing negative about the world. When I do my gain meditation every morning, I get in touch with my breath, much as you took us through. And then I go to my gratitude and I consider, contemplate that for which I'm grateful. Then I transition to what is painful and what I must accept that I cannot change, that causes pain. And if I accept it, my suffering diminishes proportionally. Suffering equals pain times resistance. If I lower my resistance towards zero, the pain is still there, but the suffering goes to zero. And then I go to intention. What is my intention? I want to be purposeful. And then I go to non-judgment. And I actually envision the earth suspended in space, as in one of these beautiful NASA images. And the earth is not good. I understand the point of your practice of repeating to oneself, the world is good, my world is good. But another way of looking at it is that the world is neither good nor bad. The world is simply as it is. And if I look at it as viewed from space, it's this beautiful orb that's suspended there. It's not good or bad. And then if I begin to see the world as neither good nor bad, I can eventually learn to see myself as neither good nor bad. And again, these elements of gain are intertwined. So this is intertwining acceptance, accepting myself, accepting the reality of now exactly as it is, not trying to resist and morph it into something that it isn't.
Wholeheartedly agree. I was thinking about, I got lost there for a second.
I was interested in your response to, you know, my world is good. I understand that exercise.
This is
the alternative.
Yes. So the idea, and what I wanted to address here too is, and for the listeners in particular, we come at this from a lot of years of doing the work. We come at this from having spent many years in meditation, spent a lot of time in contemplation. And I was reading a little bit about your piece in meditation, which I started laughing out loud because I did a whole show on the myth of meditation that started with, there are no rules. If you're coming at it with rules, you've missed the point. So let's start over and not have rules. But I really want people to understand that it's important to recognize that getting to that place that Dr. Hammer is talking about, that place of the observer, that place of neutrality, is not a manufactured experience, meaning you can't talk yourself into that experience. You can work yourself to that experience through the work that you do on a daily basis that helps you to align with whatever you want to call it, God, the greatest part of yourself, however you choose to look at that. But it's important because I don't want anybody to walk away thinking, oh, okay, I can just look at this pretty globe and look, there's no more bad and there's no more good. Well, yeah, ultimately, but we want to make sure that you're understanding the context of that understanding. It's an experiential thing that happens as a result of doing the work, which is the whole point of this show and the whole point of, I think, what most of us do is to encourage people as much as possible to step into this reality, because the more of us who can get here, and that's what My World is Good really is the essence of. It is, we've been so hyper-focused in the negative experience. We've been so hyper-focused in all of what we're seeing unfolding on the planet that this was a way of creating a balancing point is all. Not that you're going to, I truly believe, just like you do with intentionality, that the more goodness you can focus into, the more goodness you're going to create and see in the world.
Right. See the world with what Francis Lucille called benevolent indifference.
Yes.
So you don't have to judge it, but you can have sort of a gentle smile of acceptance and acknowledging the beauty without really judging it. And I think that, again, our minds are wired to have a negativity bias and to be distracted by the past and the future. And we can use our intention to rewire the way we think. And so I like the pronouncement that my world is good, as you suggested, to sort of bring our negativity bias toward the center, to bring us toward a neutral place of non-judgment. And so I believe that is likely your intention with that exercise as well.
Well, and I wrote here, as you were talking, I wrote removing the fight. removing the fight is everything seems to be geared to, oh, we're going to fight this, we're going to fight that, we're going to fight cancer, we're going to fight COVID, we're going to fight all these things we're fighting against. It's recognizing that as soon as you stop fighting, as soon as you step away from that battle, you are going to the space that he's talking about. You are no longer resisting what is, you're simply providing and presenting an energy, that indifference that says, this is all going on, I'm contributing this. I'm choosing to contribute this energy because this energy moves things in a different direction. And so I just think it's that, that's to me what, I think you got to take each piece as it comes. And I think the process, interestingly enough, the process is kind of highly unique, and yet we arrive at the same destinations. And I find that fascinating.
I find there that is, you know, as I said, there is only one truth, and it's quite a simple concept. And it's just that there's a lot of different ways to approach it and yes, to arrive at that one place.
Yes.
Or that we're one gonna take non-place.
Yes, the non-place. We're going to take a quick break. This quick break, a quick commercial. When we come back, then Dr. Hammer is going to have a few minutes to talk to the audience directly and get to share with you the work that he's doing, because he's doing some amazing stuff out there. So we'll be right back right after this. If I can find it.
The Science of Transformation Method. And I can't tell you the difference that it's made in my life.
This program is all about you coming into the greatest form of you. Are back. I'm going to turn it over to you, Dr. Hammer, to share with whatever you would like. We'll be right back. It's all yours. You can talk about, you want to put your book up?
I don't actually have a copy of it with me.
I have it on the screen. I'll put it up for you.
Sure. Yeah. I would be happy to talk about what I think is just one approach to a presence practice, one approach to being present, and that's through the elements embraced by the acronym GAME. And I think that to begin with, gratitude is an essential component of happiness. I think that it's clear that you can be poor and happy, you can be physically disabled and happy, but you won't find anyone who's ungrateful and happy. And we all have much for which to be grateful. So I start the GAME meditation with a breathing exercise, much as Jim was taking us through. I encourage slowing down the breath, and one can do that by breathing in slowly, say to a count of three or four, pausing to a count of three or so, and then gradually letting go of the breath without effort to a count of four or five or six. And slowing the breath actually has a physiologic effect on our sympathetic nervous system. It allows it to diminish the outflow of adrenaline in our body. And so our heart rate slows and our blood pressure decreases, and we can feel ourselves kind of sinking into a state of relaxation. And then we begin to contemplate that for which we're grateful. And the first thing that comes to mind for me is has to do with the fact that I'm here today, because I was diagnosed with a form of leukemia about 10 years ago, and I didn't think I would be alive in 10 years. And fast forward to the present time, and I take a pill every day, and there's no evidence of leukemia in my body, and I feel great. So I'm very grateful for the immunotherapy that I'm allowed to partake of, and just the wonders of modern medicine. And that translates into my appreciation and gratitude for this moment, for this breath right now. And then I contemplate other things for which I'm grateful. I'm grateful for my work. It's a privilege to take care of children and their families. And I'm grateful for the love I share with people in my family and other loved ones in my life and my colleagues at work. And we all have much for which to be grateful. And then I transition to acceptance, because I think, as Jim was alluding to, resisting what is a source of suffering. And again, suffering equals pain times resistance. So if we lower our resistance, the pain is still there, but the suffering diminishes. And what comes to me first is always the loss of my son at the age of 29, 4 years ago. And that's something that I cannot change. And so I must accept. And I actually envision this pain coming closer and closer, my heart opening, the pain entering my heart, and I merge with it. There's really no separation between the pain and my heart. And in this way, I feel complete acceptance. And usually the pain is not as bad as we thought when we were resisting it. And then I transition to intention. And, you know, the wonderful thing about intention is that we can rewire our brains. And a great example of that is a program at Duke University called Three Good Things, where they've shown that simply by thinking of three positive things that transpired during the day as we get ready to go to bed, we sleep better and we're happier. So practicing three good things, even for 15 days, keeps people happier than they were prior to the program for 6 months or so. So why not just do it every night? It doesn't take any time. You can do it while you're turning down the bed linens, et cetera. So through intentional practice, such as three good things, we can rewire our brains away from the negativity bias and away from the obsession with the past and the future and allow ourselves to be present. And then I transition to the Annan Gang, which is non-judgment. And as I said, I actually personally, I view the Earth as seen from space in one of our beautiful NASA images. And I recognize that the Earth is beautiful, but it's essentially neither good nor bad. It just is the way it is. And then I consider myself in the same way. I just am the way I am. And once we accept this and we drop all judgments, we are freed of having this useless activity of the mind, which is always comparing and labeling things as good or bad. Then we go back to the breath, and all that can be done within 3 to 5 minutes. And we slowly open our eyes. And for the rest of the day, we can practice these gain elements. And if we're feeling anxious, if we're feeling rushed, if we're feeling judgment, self-judgment or judgment of others, and we recognize that this is not helping us, we can just go back to our breath, and we associate the focus on our breath with these gain elements. And so this practice is very simple. It helps bring our focus to the present moment. And I think by embracing these four pillars of spiritual presence and happiness, we can in fact be much more present and happy in our lives. And the practice has worked well for me and lots of other people with whom I've had the pleasure of sitting. So that's my general approach. That's my presence practice. And you know, I think that all roads lead to the same truth.
That is the truth. There it is, Gain Without Pain, Dr. Hammer's book. He just outlined for you the amazing process that you can use that can create change now. I mean, that's the thing that's so remarkable is it's you can affect change right now. It's just simply a matter of making that choice. So I wanted to, since you brought it up so beautifully, let's talk about intention. Let's understand a little bit more about intention and how you see it. And let's talk about how we generate that intention. I do some things through my programs and the things I'm working with my clients that I think are probably very similar, but I'd love to hear how you understand intention and how you utilize it.
Sure. Well, you know, one of my heroes is Jon Kabat-Zinn, who I think is really the founder of modern mindfulness practice. And he defined mindfulness as awareness of the present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally. And so that on purpose is intention. because, as we've discussed, our brains are wired in ways that tend to veil the truth. You know, this is part of our developmental process becoming apparently this separate self, this ego of, you know, learning our boundaries and learning what's me and not me, learning what's mine and not mine. This is sort of a requisite process to go through when you're children. And the net of that, plus I think what's ingrained in our thinking processes from our ancestors and going back tens of thousands of years, even, as I said, this negativity bias and this obsession with the past and the future, these apparently veil the truth. And the truth is that our true nature is happiness. So we have to rewire our brains on purpose. It's not just going to happen. If we don't have intention, that means we're sort of being led around by the way our minds are apparently programmed. And that isn't necessarily the most adaptive way to think and be as teenagers and young adults and as older adults. So it's not going to happen by itself because of these ways our brains are inherently wired in our early learning and upbringing. So if we want to change that for the better, we have to do it with purpose. And that's what intention is.
Yeah. And I want to add a word to that. And that's conscious. Yes. You were talking a lot about the wiring of the brain for fear. And I want to clarify for people because, and if you have a different viewpoint of this, I'm happy to hear it. But the wiring that he's talking about is unconscious wiring. It is, you came in as a sponge. You came in to learn. You came in to experience this world. And so you didn't filter as a young person. You didn't have the capacity to filter. You had the capacity to absorb. You absorb your parents. You absorb their energy. You absorb their experiences in an effort to understand your own world. So the wiring that he's talking about is not coming in wired for fear. It is what you have been programmed through the course of your life experience to the point that you become aware that you're programmed. And at the point that you become aware of that, that's what we call awakening. That's what we call becoming conscious. And as you become conscious, you then begin to unfold that training and that intentionality that came from unconsciousness, but now you're doing it from conscious approach, from conscious awareness of. And the impact of that is it takes a minute because we're so used to passively learning in that regard that we have to train ourselves to step into a new way of being in our own lives that says, oh, I have the ability to change this. Oh, I have the ability to migrate to a new way of being, a new thought process, a new whatever. I'm going to rewire this now. You don't get to rewire me anymore. You know, I don't mean that as bad, they're bad and you're not. I don't mean that at all. It's just the nature of the human experience, quite frankly, similar to looking at the globe and not being judgmental of it being good or bad. It is what it is. Are there ways we can prove it? Of course there are, but we have to learn that process too as we go along. So we are in the last few minutes of our time, pardon me with my glasses there. I love the way you bring intention. Can we talk a little bit about how you apply it? So if we think in terms of being conscious now, we're saying, okay, I'm in a situation where I'm experiencing fear. Let's pick something, anything. I'm in fear. My relationship feels unstable, so I'm feeling some fear about that. Notice part of it is understanding that the fear is generated because of the stories your mind is providing you to support the situation that is occurring in front of you, which is neither good nor bad. It's simply a situation. And your mind is equating that energy to other energies that are similar to in the warehouse of the subconscious. And it's pulling all of that ammunition forward and saying, see, here is all the reasons you should feel this way. And what we're saying now is that the mind's going to do that anyway. That's what it does. But what you can do now is you can say, yeah, that's what we used to do, but we don't do that anymore. We're going to do this. And you set this aside and you make a different choice to an energy or a focus or an intention that suits where you choose to grow into.
What do you think? Exactly. I mean, you put it very well, Jim. Essentially, we learn through our practice to recognize when our minds are working in maladaptive ways. Mm. So when it comes to the future, we talked about fear. Our minds, because of our negativity bias, get stuck in this catastrophizing mode. We think of the worst thing that could happen, and we fixate on that. And for most of us, that's maladaptive. For me, at times, it might be adaptive to catastrophize, because in the intensive care unit, and when
you're dealing with catastrophe,
heart surgery, I do sometimes want to think of the worst thing that can happen so I can take measures to prevent it. But in general, that sort of catastrophizing through our negativity bias.
Let's point something out, if I may, if I could point something out here. The big difference between the two is that you are not in catastrophe mode. You're utilizing it as a way of understanding your current now. That's a very different experience than when you're catastrophizing from the mind's made up stories. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're right. And you know, that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it, is it adaptive or maladaptive? Well, if I'm going to pack my backpack for a camping trip, I might want to think of some bad things that might happen. So I could pack something in there, you know, make sure I take a compass because I might get lost. Take a rain poncho because I might get soaked. So those are adaptive thoughts. So what intention is to me is, it's the learned recognition of maladaptive thought processes that we can then, through recognizing them, let them go. But we have to do that with purpose. We have to do that with intention. So let's just become sensitive to the negativistic thoughts, the catastrophizing thoughts that we have. And when they're maladaptive, let's use our intention and take advantage of our neuroplasticity and decide to let those go. So the practice comes from living in a way that you recognize when your mind is working in these ways, and you learn methods to simply let go. So, you know, ways to let go of maladaptive thinking are going to your gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment with your breath.
Only every time.
That's the message in my book. There are other ways to do that, but they all require intention.
Yes. And only every time. I mean, that's the lovely thing about truth, is that there's never a time that won't apply. There's never a time you can't use that tool. It will work every time in every situation, and it may require a little more of your energy depending on the situation. But that's the cool thing about intention. You know, I didn't really think about it until actually we started talking about having you on the show. I hadn't thought about it in this way before, but I go through a whole process before every show that's actually gain. It's actually a process of, I go into deep meditation, I go into a quiet place, I bring your energy into my space, I feel us out, I appreciate what's going to happen, I appreciate the amazing connection we're going to have, I appreciate the great show that's going to happen and the people out there that are getting to experience it, and I just be in that moment of intending to create a positive experience. And then I got to show up for that. So I can intend it all day long, but then I got to back it up with being here and connecting to you and listening to what you're saying and being in the moment with you in this time to hear your words and hear your energy and feel you. So that I understand that we may be saying similar things, but the language is different. Does it need to be adjusted a little? How, you know, and I just think that's absolutely amazing that we get to do that. And I know you probably have similar exercises that you go through in your day.
I can imagine go through the connection to the breath and the gain process in 10 seconds. You know, once you've really embraced the practice, it just sort of, you can drop into it anytime.
Anytime. Well, we are, believe it or not, at our time. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here. It's been great talking to you. Great to meet you. This is the first time he and I have actually seen each other physically, got to talk to each other. So I'm super excited that we had this conversation. And I'm so grateful that you were here. Make sure you check out Dr. Greg's book. I don't know if I can get it here on the picture. Here we go. One more time up on the screen. Gain Without Pain. Check it out. And that's available through your website, right? And yes. Through all major book outlets. as it were.
It's on Amazon.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and those guys. There's this GregHammerMD.com. You can check it out there. Anything you'd like to say in closing to finish our conversation today?
I'd just like to express my gratitude of joining with you today, Jim, and happy to come back anytime. It's been lovely.
Awesome. I'd love to have you back. I think we could go down a lot of rabbit holes together. We could have a lot of fun with these conversations. So appreciate you very much. Thank you for being here. If you want to hang out, I'll be right back about a minute after I do the closing, and I could chat for you on the other side. But thank you again. Guys, thank you for being here. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on the next Adventures in Truth livecast. Thanks. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth livecast. Please like, subscribe, and share. If you'd like to learn more about Jim's book, Fear is a Choice, Unraveling the Illusion of Our Separation from Love, check it out at www.fearisachoicebook.com. Also check out Moments of Truth, a new offering from Adventures in Truth. If you'd like to work with Jim, check out www.thescienceTransformation.com to book a session. Tune in live every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time and every Friday, 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Or look for our new releases and podcasts every Monday. Until next time, be well, and we'll see you again on Adventures in Truth livecast.